And we're live.
911, what is your emergency?
Hello. I'm very scared right now. There's someone who just tried to rob me.
Okay, sir, can you tell me where you are?
The corner of Om and Ulla.
Okay, Om and Ulla. Okay, putting that down. Can you tell me what the suspect looks like? I do have a patrol car near your area.
About 5'9".
Okay.
So very tall.
Okay. Did you get to see the perpetrator's face at all? Do you know what race he is, ethnicity?
He had a nose, eyes, I saw those.
Okay, sir, I need you to be a little bit more specific. What was the race of this particular man?
Well, he was racing towards me, so he was very fast.
Sir, no, I think you're confused. What was his skin color, sir? What did he look like?
I don't see how that's really relevant to the situation.
It's extremely relevant, sir. I have a patrol car that is literally turning the block where you are, so I need to know what he looks like if we're going to catch this man.
Listen, African Americans have been oppressed for a long time in this country through systemic racism. I've had just about enough of your racism.
Sir, I am African American. I need to know the skin color of this man. Sir, are you there?
I'm here.
He was...
Mulatto?
You, a little bit more specific there, sir.
He was African descent.
So he's black. Is that what you're saying, sir?
Fine, he's black.
Thank you.
But I don't feel good about it.
He's black, but I don't feel good about it. Welcome to Will and Amala Live. That is our cold open for today. Oh, and man. Today... we have some hot, hot stories for you. Some of them are going to make you very angry, as they've made all of us very angry. Plus, we have a special guest on the show today. Tim Ballard's back. Hey, Tim.
I'm so happy to be back. You guys are awesome.
Oh, thanks, Tim. And he's going to be on not just for a small 10 to 15 minute segment, but he's on for the whole show today, giving commentary. So we're going to throw some stories everybody's way, see what people's thoughts are on this. Unfiltered, you're getting our direct thoughts on what's going on right now. We are going to cover what has happened in Waukesha at the Christmas parade and the deaths that have been incurred there from a man by the name of Daryl Brooks, we suspect at the moment. We're also going to compare that to what has happened in Kenosha and the response Kyle Rittenhouse has got to his self-defense case. Can't stress that enough, self-defense. How MSNBC and CNN have reacted to him in comparison to this one Daryl Brooks. We're also going to talk about the possibility of COVID-19 conspiracy theorists being brought to justice, whatever that means. And then we have Dear Will and Amala Live, where we are going to give you our best advice. Will, I don't know if it's ever Will's best advice, but...
Well, it's my best advice. Even if you guys don't want to take it, it's still the best advice. That's not my fault.
Just kiss her.
That is the best advice.
Now, let's get into story number one. This has been everywhere. If you've turned on the news at all, been on social media at all today, you have heard about this tragedy. This was at a Christmas parade in Waukesha, Wisconsin. Now, we now have 5 dead and 48 injured after a man by the name of Daryl Brooks Jr. drove his red SUV into the parade, obviously with no warning, catching a lot of people off guard and killing many. Now, let's get into the background around this case and sort of lay it out before we get into our commentary on it. So again, this happened at the Christmas parade in Waukesha. Daryl Brooks decided to drive through this, running people over. Let's get some background into this man, because it can be quite hard, depending on what media outlet you are looking at, to find out who even did this. So Daryl Brooks is a convicted sex offender who was wanted in Nevada for failure to obey sex offender laws. According to the Washoe County Sheriff's Office, Brooks was convicted in 2006 of having consensual sex with a 15-year-old and conceiving a child with her. He was sentenced to probation, but was arrested for failure to obey sex offender laws in 2016. He's also been caught with multiple offenses carrying methamphetamines. He's also incurred many other charges, scooping out on his bail. And we have some other court records here saying that he obstructed an officer, he jumped bail, he had second-degree reckless endangerment, putting people in safety situations that are clearly unsafe, domestic abuse charges. This guy has quite the laundry list when it comes to his rap sheet. And now we can add what, I don't know what you would call this, a massacre or an attack that happened at this Waukesha Christmas parade.
Some people are calling it a terrorist attack. Some yes. people aren't calling it a terrorist attack. Terrorist attack means it's politically motivated, or usually in some way religiously politically motivated, something like that. Now, as someone who doesn't want to be that person to jump the gun when it came to like a Nick Sandman or when it came to a Kyle Rittenhouse and jump the gun and say, well, this was obviously a terrorist attack. I'm not going to say that at this moment.
Yep.
I do find it quite odd that the police, with their statement that happened earlier today, came out and said, so no one was pursuing him before, but it's not a terrorist attack.
Yeah.
Are you going to explain to us why it's not a terrorist attack? Or like, I feel like the people, the families of those who are injured and murdered by this person deserve to know why this wasn't a terrorist attack. The American people deserve to know that this isn't going to happen again, or it's not a coordinated effort. Like, and someone should tell us why this is happening. I feel like we have the right to know.
Yeah, and to give some extra context into what you said about him running away from somebody, the immediate story that was ran with by much of the leftist media was this man was running away from a different crime that he had committed, and he unintentionally drove into this Christmas parade. He didn't mean to. He just had to get away from a knife fight that he was just involved in. Now, that turned out to not be true. I've got the video here from the press conference that we will show you confirming that that is not true. Here's the short clip.
I want to dispel some rumors. There's no pursuit that led up to this incident. This is not a terrorist event.
There we go. Now, he seems very sure about the fact that there was no pursuit that led up to this. He seems also very sure in not calling this a terrorist attack. However, we don't have information on that, so we will see. But the leftist media jumped on this and said, well, it's unintentional. It's unintentional. You know, it wasn't a coordinated effort. It wasn't premeditated. And they were also really, really slow to get out the picture of the man who did this. I will show you the picture here. This is Daryl Brooks, for those of you who would like to see or haven't seen him yet. I ran through countless articles, CNN, MSNBC, ABC News, and they all said, well, we have a 39-year-old male person of interest. And that was it. Knowing full well that they had a name, knowing full well that they had a picture, none of that was put out. And I wonder why.
What do you think, Tim?
Well, I think that we live in a day and age where truth doesn't matter. Truth is relative. And this is symptomatic of something much worse. Yeah. Because when truth doesn't matter, the Constitution doesn't matter, rights don't matter, and we lose our liberties. So when I see this story, I just see one more example of moral relativity, right? Yep. It's scary.
It is scary. Because with the truth not mattering, that means that even a guy who came into a Christmas parade, ran down barricades, ran down all these different people to commit a horrible, evil act. Mm-hmm. It means that people can scapegoat it and say, oh, well, it wasn't intentional. It wasn't. He was running from some other crime. That's the story that we're going with. And then they're trying to like skirt the responsibility away from the guy in a way to make it seem like, oh, this wasn't actually so bad because it wasn't a terrorist attack. It wasn't racially motivated. So, oh, this isn't actually that bad. But you know what is bad? Yep. White people. White people are terrorists. You know, they won't call this act. Again, I'm not saying if this was a terrorist act and whatever it is with this guy. I personally, in my own belief, I think that it'll come out that this was a terrorist attack. But I'm not going to say that now until I have all the information. But people came out and said parents going to school board meetings were domestic terrorists.
Mm-hmm.
Right? If you go to a school board meeting as a parent, you are a domestic terrorist.
Right.
But if you are driving in a Christmas parade, killing people, slaughtering people, murdering them, apparently that's not terrorism at all.
Right. Apparently that's okay. Apparently that's fine. We're not going to label that what it actually is. And I think there's multiple conversations. I think we're going to talk about this for a while because there's multiple conversations that we need to get into around this event. I think first and foremost, what we're going to talk about is the sort of inherent leftist reaction that people have to this being a black suspect, not putting the pictures out there, not identifying him as black in the articles when they sure wanted to jump on Kyle Rittenhouse for being white after his incident. Immediately, the narrative of guilt, extremist, white supremacist was thrown on Kyle Rittenhouse after his incident with no facts other than a video on the matter. And now we have this man and we don't see any of that labeling. I want to show you a news clip that Andy Ngo posted on his Twitter of an eyewitness calling in to document what happened in this event to the news. Here's that clip.
It was a black guy with dreadlocks by himself. I don't know if you want to use that.
Okay, well, listen, Rick.
And I'm not, listen, hey, I'm a black guy, so So I'm not, you know, saying that because I'm, you know, a white guy out of Arkansas saying black guys did it.
Okay.
But this is what her daughter said.
Rick, I should inform you right now, you are on live television.
There we go. We get this black guy calling in saying, yo, just to let you know, I'm an eyewitness here. The dude was black and he has dreads. And he goes, I don't know if you want to put that in there. Amazing to me.
Beware that you're on live television before you suggest the race of the person who you saw with your own eyes.
Right.
Before you report those facts,
yes.
Beware that you're on live television because it may be contrary to the acceptable narrative.
Yeah, before you are objective in a way that can help people understand the situation, make sure that it supports the narrative before you say it live on the news.
The fact that this isn't being mentioned is indicative to a greater problem that I think that even a problem that's on the right too, where people have in many ways, because of how the left has acted with things turning them into a race issue, it has pushed conservatives in some ways to push things into a race issue as well. And it's like, this guy, it doesn't matter if he's black, unless it, you know, it's some really weird black motivated thing.
Right.
But if he went and killed all these people, I don't care what color his skin is. He's an evil, disgusting, horrible person for doing this. If Kyle Rittenhouse defended himself and he was black, white, Asian, that doesn't matter to me. It matters that he was using his Second Amendment right to defend himself.
Yep.
Like, none of these things at all have anything to do with race. Why do they have to do with race?
I'd actually argue also that it's racist to treat black people with kid gloves. Mm-hmm. Like, right. I wouldn't want to be treated that way. I had this happened to me at OUR when there was a picture when I was liberating a child who was black, who I ended up adopting, right? And I was accused by these leftists of this white savior complex. Have you heard of this? Mm-hmm. Where it's like, you should not be showing pictures of you rescuing children of color. I'm like, why? It doesn't matter to me. You're acting as though these kids are people of color need special treatment.
Yep.
Like there's something lesser than. That's what you're saying. You're actually being racist. These kids don't care if you're white, purple, black, or if you're a giraffe, they don't care what you are, get them out of hell. And I couldn't believe that I had to defend myself because of the color of my skin or my operator skin and think about that as being something that's important as part of a rescue operation. But this is where we are. And it's actually, I found it so racist that they were acting as though we had to treat these kids of color as lesser than, as if they're, you know, special needs or something.
Yep.
Because it's totally racist to act like this. Don't you agree? I mean,
it's like the same thing as affirmative action.
Yep.
Yeah.
The soft and hard bigotry of low expectations. You expect nothing of people. You label them a victim. And this is what happens. This is exactly what occurs. And you can't treat people that way. And I think people, specifically black people and people of color in this country, are going to wake up to that. That's why we're seeing this surge in people going, you know what? No, I'm leaving the party that says that to me. I'm leaving this sort of ideology that views me as such, because people aren't that. There's no difference between me and Tim and Will. We're not treated any differently. We have the same amount of success. We're all sitting here at the table right now having this conversation, yet somebody would look at me and go, no, you're a victim and you should be treated differently. Where's the logic there? There is none.
They're telling you you're lesser than.
Yes, yeah.
There's
exactly.
No other conclusion.
Exactly.
They are the racists.
You have it better off than me and Tim.
Yeah, I really do. I always say on the show, there's nothing better to be in this country right now than a black female. And I will carry that for as long as it holds true. And so far it has. So, yeah. But back to this case here. Now, another discussion we need to get into and some more context on Darrell Brooks and why some are saying this may have been politically motivated, just so you feel like you have the full story and all the armor that you need to talk about this. Andy Ngo tweeted out, the man in custody over the mass casualty incident at Waukesha, Wisconsin, the Christmas parade, has posts on his social media in support of Black Lives Matter causes, George Floyd, and black nationalism. He also has a post about how to get away with running people over in the street on his social media.
Well, he didn't get away with it.
No.
So, pretty stupid post.
It is a pretty stupid post. But it's not his first time running somebody over, guys, because he had just gotten out of being arrested a few days prior to this attack for what? Running a young woman over at a gas station, a woman that he was harassing and following and trying to get into his car. And when she refused, he ran her over with his car. So he seems to like doing this to people.
Well, the worst... Getting more into the story.
Yes.
He was let out on $1,000 bail.
Yep.
$1,000 bail. He was let out after running someone over. Why was he let out? What is this stupid leftist stuff about, oh, we just got to be better to some of these criminals and stuff like that? It's like these people are doing evil things. If he was kept in prison and was not given some ludicrously low bail money,
This would have never happened. And again, this man is a career criminal. We're talking drug charges, reckless endangerment charges, obstructing an officer charges, charges of sleeping with underage girls, running a woman over with his car. He has countlessly committed crimes, and to his own success, because he gets away with it and he gets to continue to do it. There should have been a last straw ages ago, but this should be the last straw. And this really points out, more so than anything, more so than race and comparing it to Kyle Rittenhouse and all this, it points a failure in the justice system, because they knew who this man was, they knew what he was doing, and they knew, based on the patterns of his previous run-ins with law enforcement, that he would do this again. And now what we've done is just let him out in the street, and he's done it to, honestly, one of the worst standards you could possibly commit a crime.
Mm-hmm. It really has. Now, there are lots of people out there who, I get there's a lot of problems with our prisons and things that need to be reformed and make it better for people.
Yes.
But you have people who are conservatives and then liberals coming together for these kinds of these bad bipartisan acts of let's try and fix these systems and fix, you know, make it so we destigmatize crime and so many things, and they let people get off like this, and it's like each side just wants to prove, like, oh, the other side, they're the real racist. And so then they make these kinds of sweeping things in criminal justice reform that end up having consequences like this, where someone can get off on the street after committing a crime with $1,000 bail. I mean, in Los Angeles, I'm pretty sure they just got rid of bail, right? What was the law that essentially is like, you don't
like
even
zero
have
to, bail, yeah.
Zero bail.
Yep.
You can commit a crime and have zero bail and just get out back on the street.
Yeah, and that's doing really great for Los Angeles,
yeah, exactly,
and our crime
rates. With higher crime than ever since the 90s.
And
when it was the worst.
The people that support these policies, too, are directly harming those poor communities that these criminals go back to, and who enable violent, crazy acts like this to happen. And it's like the people who supported those ideas, those are bad ideas, like Tim was saying, it starts with bad ideas. These are the negative externalities that come with that.
Absolutely.
You see that when it comes to the sex criminals and things like that that you work with? How is the justice system towards that in terms of, has it gotten worse or better for keeping these people?
You know, it's improved. You wouldn't believe, in the early 2000s when I was first in this, fighting this for the first time, I was shocked. I mean, I remember we arrested a guy who had over a million pieces of child rape videos, and the judge couldn't comprehend what child exploitation was, right? He thought it must be 16 or 17 year olds. And during the sentencing, I pleaded with him, let me go on the stand and show you what this is. These are 5 year olds. These are 6 year olds. Mm-hmm. And it's something that that most human beings can't comprehend, but this is the reality of the evil that's out there. So it really is just educating people on how bad it is. We're not talking enough about human trafficking, child exploitation. So I would say it has improved.
Yeah, I mean, and that's the thing. It's like, as you get more educated in any field, things are going to improve. But now there's this push to just simply not be educated about it. People don't want to know about it. They know, here's what they hear. They hear black people disproportionately affected. And then they go, okay, well, now I need to do the most radical form of reform or abolition to fix this problem, without any education on the problem, without any education on crime rates, without any education about how it's affecting communities. People just jump to a conclusion before they have any facts.
Right.
Now, speaking of jumping to a conclusion, after the Rittenhouse verdict rang out not guilty, a great win for Americans and Kyle Rittenhouse himself, there were protests. Of course there were, because we see a white man be found not guilty and we immediately take to the streets. One who decided to hop back into the civil rights movement, Jesse Jackson, Reverend Jesse Jackson, you guys are, I'm sure, familiar with him and his work in civil rights. They did a protest protesting the verdict of Kyle Rittenhouse. I'll show you the video here.
What do we want it? If we don't get it, if we don't get it,
shut it down.
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 Who shuts it down?
Fantastic. I want them to hold the same energy today and take to the streets over this Christmas parade and scream for justice and a guilty verdict and scream for this man being put in prison for life. I want the same energy. But are we going to get the same energy? No.
Those are just, I mean, they're only saying platitudes. They're saying nothing that actually matters or means anything or makes any real change. Saying no fascist USA when someone has their Second Amendment right that they used means nothing to anybody. And that's not why the Second Amendment was created, so that you could take it away calling it fascist. I mean, it was created so that people like Kyle could defend himself from attackers and so that people could protect themselves from tyranny from their government. I mean, that's why they have it. To have these people talk about shutting it down and it means nothing. They're not actually going and doing anything.
No.
You know, it's like, I don't know. People always talk about fighting and stuff like that and then we have to go and fight and things like that. But, you know, if you're going to go and fight, at least have like a message, at least have like goals,
yep.
Something that you're going to do. You can't just walk out there uneducated with a sign and say, well, we got to fight against fascism. We got to fight against white supremacy. All right. Point to fascism. Point to white supremacy. Yep. Well, it's out there. It's institutional. You know, you can't prove it. It's just, it's there. It's like until you have goals with the things that you actually want to achieve with the fight that you have, nothing's going to change.
Yep.
It's just so many platitudes by all of these people. And it's sickening. It really is. Because the platitudes that they talk about influence people who actually do have power because they know how to feed off of these people, off of their anger and their discontent. It's like self-help books.
Oh, gosh. Are you going to go into a tangent about self-help books?
I won't go into a tangent about self-help books, but I could. I don't believe in self-help books.
No, it's exactly what it is. It's all emotional. It's like you turn on the TV these days and watch the news and there's nothing in the vein of objectivity at all. It is all, honestly, you turn on the news and you go, I don't want to hear what's happening in the world. I want to hear this person's opinion on what's happening in the world because that's what you're getting. I want to hear Tiffany Cross of MSNBC's opinion. I want to hear Joy Reid's opinion. I want to hear Sean Hannity's opinion. It doesn't matter. Both sides of the aisle. You turn on the news to hear opinions. You're not hearing news. You don't get facts. How do we combat that? What do we do about that?
Well, our founders gave us the solution. Mm-hmm. Honestly, the day the Constitution came into being really was the day that George Washington took his first inaugural and gave this address in New York City, April 30th, 1789. He said something so profound that this should be a national holiday, by the way, April 30th. He said this, "The smiles of heaven can never be expected upon a nation that disregards the eternal rules of order and right, which heaven itself has ordained." So there are rules. This is not relative. There is objectivity here. And what the founders did is they understood that these rights are from God and that there are, and it's Judeo-Christian principles, biblical principles, and they did their best to put those into this thing called the Constitution, right? Which has been forgotten and discarded completely. But that is the rule book, the rules of order and right. Yeah. And which it makes me sick that we are completely from the Second Amendment to the First Amendment. It doesn't matter because what you're talking about, the emotion and the lack of education, the lack of understanding of our history, that we could as a people completely ignore the Constitution. We were talking before the show about what happened here in California and other states, right? When churches were shut down because of the pandemic. Now, I've lost friends to COVID. I know that it's a real thing. Mm-hmm. But the Constitution, consider what our founders did to create this thing, right? They died. They shed blood. For what? Really, what it boils down to was a 3 or 4% tax on a single commodity on tea. But they were willing because taxation without representation, they fought. Imagine if the king was doing more than that, saying, hey, smallpox is coming, shut down your businesses, shut down your churches. I mean, it would have been 1,000 times. I'm not calling for revolution, by the way. Okay, but I'm just saying it would have been 1,000 times more passionate in that fight that we all celebrate on the 4th of July, right? And here we are, far from that revolutionary spirit. We just keel over and say, you know, yes, King Newsom, if you say shut down the churches, we're going to shut. I mean, the Constitution was created under the rules of order and right, created for this very moment in history, right? For this very moment when someone thought in the government that they had the power to shut down churches, right? So this is our problem is there is no order and right. It's all relative. It's all emotion.
Yep.
And we're going to lose everything if we keep down this path.
What does the Constitution mean if people don't know it?
Exactly.
You know, if people don't learn that the Constitution is a good thing or even know what it is, I mean, even more in California, you don't even just have the First Amendment being taken away. You have the Seventh Amendment. You have due process. You have all these other things going on that's not just, you know, the things that everybody knows. And it's like, if people don't even know what it is, then they're not going to think that they need to defend it or that they even, or that the Constitution using it is a way to take back your rights.
And that's why, Californians rolled over.
Yeah.
Because they didn't even know what their rights were. They didn't know that the Constitution actually prohibits Governor Newsom, prohibits him. It's not like neutral. It's not like silent. It prohibits him from shutting down businesses and churches. There is no exemption in the Constitution for a pandemic.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so he has no right. We have the right. We are the people. We are the power. And they don't know it. We don't know it. So we just roll over and say, just tell us where to go. Whatever you tell us, jump off a bridge. Okay, we'll jump off a bridge. Right. And that's, I feel that's what the people, we need to reinvigorate this kind of revolutionary spirit and go back to our founders, right? And understand what our rights under God are.
It's absolutely
true. You didn't see in the
true.
Constitution where it said, if you have a virus with a 99.999% survival rate for children, you have to shut down the schools.
Oh, and this makes me so sick, right? We're talking again before the show on this, right? I wish we, when we made our policies, we referred to the Constitution first and second, looked at it through the eyes of a child, mm-hmm. right? And we don't do that. Children can't protest. Children can't riot. They can't march in the streets. And so they're the forgotten ones. And what I saw, because my job is to protect children, right? That's all I've done for 20 years. And what I saw what happened during the government's response to the pandemic, shutting down everything, shutting down schools, shutting down after school programs, the very safety nets that were created for our children. And what happened to them? Mm-hmm. They were told, sit in the corner, get on your iPhones, on your laptops. Mom and dad got to go find toilet paper, right? And the pedophiles are also at home. Mm-hmm. And we can track their, you know, the dark net conversations. They're talking about these kids are sitting ducks. It's harvest time. And there was an increase by the millions. There was an increase of reports to the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children from child predators originating online. So we don't even know the results of this, but it's millions disgusting. Of children have likely been are being groomed and or sexually exploited because of these shutdowns. And to your point, Will, those children and the coaches and teachers, who most of which are under 65 years old, meaning the children and the protectors have a 99.99999% chance of surviving COVID, mm-hmm. right? But that is scarier than the consequence of allowing child rape.
Right.
By the millions in additional reports, this is scary stuff. And this is when we don't think.
Yep.
We ignore the Constitution, and maybe even worse, we ignore children. The most innocent and the most precious of all.
Yeah, I mean, we talk about this on the show. It's a recurring theme. There are always hidden victims to the policies and the legislation that you advocate for. And you have to think about who those hidden victims are, whether that's in regard to COVID-19 lockdowns, immigration, gun laws, whatever. And I'm going to take it back to one of the stories that we're going to cover here out of MSNBC. You need to advocate for your rights, but first you need to know what those rights are. Reading the Constitution is a very, very important thing. Being aware of what your individual rights are in this country is an important thing. And when you advocate for the rights of others, you are advocating for your own. And everybody, no matter what color you are, should have been advocating for Kyle Rittenhouse in this case, in his case of self-defense, because in that way, you are advocating for yourself. Now, here's what Tiffany Cross, a host on MSNBC, had to say about the Kyle Rittenhouse trial.
I find these people disgusting, Ellie. I'm disgusted at what I'm seeing. It's not just this trial, it's other trials. But this in particular, the fact that white supremacists roam the halls of Congress freely and celebrate this little murderous white supremacist, and the fact that he gets to walk the streets freely, it lets you know these people have access to instituting laws. They represent the legislative branch of this country. What are we to make of that?
Welcome to the modern Republican Party. This is what these people want. And this is what a majority of white people vote for. Right? When I say that a majority of white people are in favor of this kind of violence, it is because a majority of white people consistently vote Republican. Since the passage of the Civil Rights Act, a majority of white people have voted Republican, right? So, like, this is the party that they're supporting. A majority of white people pick judges like Bruce Schrader, the judge in the Kyle Rittenhouse case. A majority of white people do.
I have to pause. Oh my gosh, is that infuriating? And this is considered a news outlet. That is considered news.
First of all, this guy's afro is about to cross state lines, okay?
Oh my gosh.
Secondly, to say that lots of white people are voting Republican is true. There's also more white people in America than any other race. So people, white people are going to vote for Democrats. White people are going to vote Republican the same way. And if you go to the richest districts in America, Aspen, Colorado, Washington, D.C., you will find that most of those places, they're in the rich places, are very white, and they vote almost overwhelmingly for Democrats. Okay? These places that have the rich, elite white people. Republicans are not the party of white people. Mm-hmm. They're the party of the working class. Okay? There's a difference. There's a difference. The left is the party of the elite. And that is why you will find all white people voting for the left in these very rich, elitist, leftist areas like Washington, D.C. or in Aspen or in San Francisco. It is white people who are doing that. So this guy's, yeah. I mean, this guy's point is moot by the things that he is even trying to prove.
And again, I'd go back to what we said before. This guy, he's not looking back to move forward. In other words, you got to look back at our history, right? The rules of order and right, the Constitution, and he doesn't like Republicans. Fine, let's go to a Democrat. Today was the day, November 22nd, 1963. John Kennedy was assassinated. Mm-hmm. What did he say about this? He actually talked about the Second Amendment, and he was extremely pro-Second Amendment. Listen to this, what he said. He said, although it is extremely unlikely that the fear of government tyranny, which gave rise to the Second Amendment, now I would actually take issue with that today. Mm-hmm. I think that we're closer to that than probably he was in 1963. But he says, will ever be a major danger to our nation. The amendment, the Second Amendment, still remains an important declaration of our basic military-civilian relationship in which every citizen, including Kyle Rittenhouse, mm-hmm. has the basic, every citizen must be ready to participate in the defense of his country. For this reason, I believe the Second Amendment will always be important. So, I mean, there's a famous Democrat who understood because he looked back. He understood history. He was a history buff. He wrote books. These people aren't doing that, right? The rules of order and right have been completely eradicated from our national fabric.
JFK was also an NRA member.
That's right.
One of the, what was it, like two other presidents? Or maybe he was one of the only ones. I forget the number.
He was also pro cutting taxes.
Mm-hmm.
And he said some pretty amazing things.
An ideology that is so anti-government, they sure as hell do not want the right to defend themselves against it. It's just amazing to me that they can see this. But these are the same people who would be cheering on the Black Panthers, who were actively armed when they were protesting in the streets during the civil rights movement. These same exact people would be cheering them on and then talking about how it's not our right to own guns and what Kyle Rittenhouse did was terrorism. Where do they get white supremacy out of the Kyle Rittenhouse case? Where is that coming from? Because really what I think is the most pervasive lie surrounding Kyle Rittenhouse is the lie of white supremacy. Where is that coming from? He killed two white people. Not exactly doing a lot to further the white race there. If he's a white supremacist, I think I would keep away from killing white people in the streets.
It's because he's white. That's it. It's literally it. Because he's white.
It's just amazing. And again, advocating for Kyle Rittenhouse's right to defend himself is advocating for your right to defend yourself. So how anybody can look at this and go, well, because he's white, I don't support it. If Kyle Rittenhouse was black, MSNBC either A, wouldn't be talking about the story or would be on the news cheering him on. It's exactly what it would be. Exactly what it would be. Yet we get this narrative instead. And again, it's very different from the narrative we get around Darrell Brooks. They wouldn't even publish what his race was, but they put out a whole article about how Kyle Rittenhouse is emboldening the white conservatives who want to kill. That's a quote from MSNBC. So it's a really great day to be Tim and Will.
Why?
Because you're white men. So it's the greatest day of your lives right now in America, right? You're the ones truly raking it in.
Apparently. I feel on the opposite, going
to
be honest.
No, it's never been better to be me. It's never been worse to be you.
Mm-hmm.
It's honestly how it is. Front and center. You guys can take that to the bank. I do sign off on that statement. I approve this message.
Every day is a good day when you're Will. I'm having a good life.
Well, good.
Even
good.
If the left hates me.
Even if the left hates you.
Because if they hate me, that means I'm doing something right.
Yeah. True. If somebody who has completely opposing ideology to you hates you, it's probably because you're doing okay.
Mm-hmm.
You're doing the right thing. Right. Now, let's get into what the left would say the solution is to a lot of these problems, and that's defunding the police. We've heard that over and over, time and time again. The left wants to defund the police. Well, here's how that worked out in Portland. From Election Wizard report, the city of Portland is refunding the police. The department got an extra $5.2 million as the city faces the greatest cop shortage in decades and record numbers of homicides after slashing $15 million from the budget over Black Lives Matter and Democrats' defund the police movement.
Makes sense. Portland is a crap hole.
Yeah, what happens after you defund the police? Riddle me that. What happens?
Then you get Chaz.
I'll tell you what happens when you defund the police, because I was in law enforcement. So again, back to the point I made before, it'd be a lot easier if our policymakers looked at every situation first and foremost through the eyes of children.
Yep.
Right? Defund the police means that the police only have, they have a smaller budget, which means they have to respond to what we call reactive cases, murders, bank robberies, things that the news is going to pick up no matter what, and you've got to respond to. But guess what? When it comes to child exploitation and human trafficking, those cases aren't reactive. They're proactive. In other words, those cases generally, there's exceptions, but generally don't fall on your lap and you got to do something. You got to go out and hunt the predators. You have to go out and find the children being exploited. So the first groups in law enforcement that will be affected are the proactive groups, because what you don't know, you don't know, and you can kind of hide that. And kids get hurt again. Over and over again, children become the victims.
It's exactly what happens. And we did a police ride along. You can watch it. It is on PragerU.com. It's also on our app. It's also on YouTube here if you guys are watching on YouTube. And I think what people forget are police officers are not just going out there and just handcuffing people. That is not their entire job. They are social workers. They are teachers. They are parents in a lot of cases in these communities. They serve so many different roles. And the police officers that we got to visit, their very presence alone was allowing young kids to be able to leave their house and go play in their yards without being shot by a gang member from across the street. There's so much more than just deterring and reacting to crimes that police officers do. Yet that never gets attention. Nobody ever talks about it. But as soon as a Black person falls victim to the police or puts himself in the situation to be shot by police, that's all you hear about. And you talk to people and they think, well, thousands of Black people are being shot by police officers every year. Completely not the case. Tell me about all the Black people that are saved by police officers every year. Not a word about it. They are completely unrecognized in the work that they do on the ground through for gang violence, prostitution, drugs, sex trafficking, human trafficking. Everything that they do is just never talked about. Never talked about.
I literally did that video.
Yeah.
I literally went out and asked people. I said, how many unarmed Black men were killed in 2019? And they were saying like thousands were killed by police. I mean, it's, you know, just incredulous numbers. It was like one in California, one unarmed Black man in the entire state of California in the year of 2019 was shot and killed by police. And in that case, it almost was like, it was like the dude's fault. He was like running away. But people just don't understand. They don't know the facts. It really boils down to that. People do not have the right information at all.
Yep.
When you don't have the right information, then you can't make good decisions about your life and about the things you should be fighting for and the things that you really make your moral compass. It gets down to more than just like, I'm going to fight for these things. Sorry, guys, if I'm swallowing and spitting. I have a sore throat. It's kind of hurting. But it turns into, if you have the wrong information and the wrong facts about something, then that bleeds into your heart. It bleeds into your moral fibers. It bleeds into who you are going to act like as a person, because you think the things you're fighting for are actually important. But then you're actually doing more harm than good because you don't understand.
If I was a young person who did nothing but watch CNN, MSNBC, and go on Facebook and Instagram, of course I would be advocating for defunding the police, because they control the narrative. They control everything that you think. And you might not think that, because nobody wants to think somebody else is playing puppet master to what I think in my brain, and that they're putting together this biased algorithm that gives me things and feeds into that emotion and feeds into these visceral reactions that I have to news and to media. But they are. And if that's all that you're ingesting as a consumer, of course you're going to believe in open borders and defunding the police and taxing the rich. And why not eat the rich at this point? Because that's something that a lot of people on the left say. Of course, that's what you're going to think, because there's no truth to it. Mm-hmm. It's only bias.
And that's why it's so important that we get the right information out there. So I really hope that you guys are not just watching our show here, but you're also going to Spotify, Google Play, Apple Podcasts. You're subscribing to Will and Amla Live. So even if you miss an episode or you can't watch it or whatever, you can go and you can subscribe to our podcast and listen to us anytime while you're driving, while you're in the shower, while you're right. at a BLM rally,
yes. well,
whatever it is you're doing, you know, you can be listening to Will and Amala live.
In virtually any country. And speaking of that, we're going to go over to Australia, right?
Oh,
got
yeah,
some news coming out of there, right?
Yeah.
Over there in the Northern Territory where all COVID refugees are going to be. Here's a video from an Australian press conference where they talk about their new COVID-19 quarantine measures.
Urgent action to escalate our response in these communities, immediately implementing a hard lockdown. That means residents of Minjari and Rockhole no longer have the 5 reasons to leave their home. They can only leave for medical treatment in an emergency or if required by law. It's highly likely that more residents will be transferred to Howard Springs today, either as positive cases or close contacts. We've already identified 38 close contacts in Binjari, and that number will go up. Those 38 are being transferred now. I contacted the Prime Minister last night. We are grateful for the support of about 20 ADF personnel as well as army trucks to assist with the transfer of positive cases and close contacts and to support the communities.
Amazing stuff. So in case you didn't know what he's saying, they're going to take positive COVID-19 patients, move them up to the Northern Territory in Australia, and they will not be able to leave unless medically necessary, so in a medical emergency, or required by law to leave there. Little camp.
So now if you get sick, which you have no choice, you don't get to choose to get sick.
No.
Okay? And also you don't have the right to not be not to be in, to not be not infected. Did I say that right? You don't have the right to not be infected. Okay? If someone infects you or you get inoculated with a virus, you don't have the right to not get sick. Okay? You just don't. There's nothing in there. And so the fact that they are now going to take you, and essentially, I don't know exactly, you know, based on this how hard of a place it is, or if it's like a prison or what. I don't want to misspeak. But that you are essentially being taken to jail because you got sick and you didn't get to choose to be sick. You are, this is even worse than jail, because in jail, at least like you committed a crime. It was your responsibility and you did the wrong thing. This is like, it's not your fault. It's not your fault that you got sick and then they take you away. How crazy. I mean, at this point, there are videos out there of people protesting and going out and speaking out against their government and all this, but it's like, how much more is the protesting going to do? I mean, it just seems it gets worse and worse. It gets worse and worse in America, and we keep protesting. We keep having people protest. I mean, at what point is this like, what else do you do? What else do you do to stop this?
And I mean, but here's the interesting reality here. I have a friend that I've made recently who's an Australian, and he's telling me that, you know, there's a lot of reporting in the US about this being a dictatorship and totalitarian. He's like, but you talk to the average Australian and they support it. And that's why education is so important. History is so important, because you look at these places where we would call that as Americans a totalitarian regime. We would call that a dictatorship. You're having your rights stripped away from you. But look underneath that and see that it's people advocating for their rights to be taken away. What happens is the government will sort of disincentivize you learning history, further you away from the truth, push in propaganda and bias, and then suddenly they don't have to take your rights away. You give them away. You willingly give them away. And to think that can't happen here is just ridiculous. Look what happened around the COVID-19 lockdown. People heard virus, they heard scary, they heard death, and they advocated for their rights being taken away from them. And there are people here in California, here all over the United States, who continue to advocate for it, who would want nothing more than to see vaccines mandated nationwide.
For babies.
For even
now.
Babies.
You guys go on my Instagram. Even babies. I can't really talk about it on here because I'll get in trouble. But on my Instagram, I was pretty mad yesterday. About, I don't know if you saw this, but I posted about Fauci said we might have vaccines against COVID for babies coming in 2022 for infants and toddlers. And that really made me really upset. And the fact that there are literally going to be people who are going to be lining up for it for their baby's 10th booster, I mean, is truly ridiculous to me. And it shows a level of evil I don't think we've seen this country in a long time, if ever. If truly ever, with the amount of corruption that we have. And so this is why, I mean, looking at Australia and looking at America, why it is truly a brave new world. Because just as Amala said, it is people who are fine with their rights being taken away so that they can live safe and comfortable lives. So that they can, you know, well, if the government's going to take me to the jail and I don't have to drive myself, that's fine. You know, it's like they want that. That is what they want.
Yep. And let's talk about that in regard to America, because Australia's got its own thing. There are Australians who are advocating for it. There are some who are not. They're going to duke it out in their country, and we will duke it out in ours. The head of the NIH, the National Institute of Health, says, quote, that COVID conspiracists should be brought to justice. Now, he's given no other context for what being brought to justice means. But we've seen this sort of sentiment underlie in a lot of the health officials talking about average American citizens and their response to COVID-19. We heard previously from Pfizer's CEO that individuals who spread false information about COVID-19 vaccinations are criminals who have literally cost millions of lives, mm-hmm. millions of grandmothers.
Don't get me started.
Take your deep breath.
Don't get me started.
How do you feel about the possibility of you being brought to justice?
Well, if they're going to bring anyone to justice, it would be me. And I'd be fine. You can make me a martyr, okay? And you will say that I am all of these things. Here's the deal, okay? I'm sure that on our video right now on YouTube, there's going to be one of those labels that says, this is, visit thecdc.com for information about, you know, how you can get your 20th booster to not be a racist. Like one of those labels
right,
that are on
right,
there.
Right, right.
And it's like, you understand why on YouTube this would happen, okay? YouTube is owned by Google. Google's parent company, Alphabet, has stake in all of these vaccine companies and owns them, okay? Mm-hmm. So when these vaccines do well and they're mandated by a government, then Google and the Alphabet, the parent company, make tons and tons of money. You don't understand this? This is why it's gone so messed up. And so then they put these labels on to make it so that you can't talk about it, because you talking about it and saying what is actually going on makes it so that they lose money. You understand that? You can't handle the truth. They don't want you to handle mm-hmm. the truth. Not for anyone's safety. If they cared about safety, they'd put out the real VAERS data. But they won't do that. Ugh, man. I'm gonna get us in trouble. Okay.
Yeah, let's move on here. Let's move on. But it's just something.
I was supposed to be good this episode.
You are supposed to be very good this episode. Yeah, but it's something to look out for, because the rhetoric still persists. People are conspiracy theorists. They're criminals. They need to be brought to justice. Keep an eye out and keep your wits about you, and you know, continue the fight. We got a lot of people in Dear Will and Amala, which we are going to get into here momentarily, sending us messages saying, "What do I do? My job is mandating vaccinations, or my school is mandating vaccinations, or my family wants me to get vaccinated." Countless messages about this. And what it really turns out to be is you stick to your guns, man. Stick to your guns. If you have a moral calling in the sense to do something or to not do something, follow that. Follow your own compass. So many people, I say this all the time on the show, so many people look up for somebody else to tell them what to do with their bodies, what to do with their families, what to do with their job, what to do with their schooling. And instead, you should be looking inward. You are stuck with yourself for the rest of your life. You are not stuck with these government officials and the people who are leaders right now for the rest of your life. You're not stuck with their legislation even for the rest of your life, hopefully. But you're stuck with you for the rest of your life. So make a decision that best, is most emblematic of your moral compass, and you will stick with that integrity for the rest of your life. So it's not going to be
your moral compass, God's moral compass.
Well,
and that's what it is for me.
I'm an agnostic, so for me, it's your moral compass, but also can be God's moral compass as well. Whatever is your through line, whatever your North Star is, you follow that and you stick to that. And at the end of your life, you'll go, you know what? I didn't let people tell me what to do. I didn't let tyranny sort of infiltrate my mindset and my family. I did what I believed was right. And that's it. Do what you believe is right. Now we're going to test all of our advice giving skills a little further. This is Tim's first time doing Dear Will and Amala, but these are going to be sort of ambiguous lifestyle relationship questions. Let's see what advice. We have all different types of spectrums in lifestyles here, so hopefully we'll give you some well-rounded advice. Dear Will and Amala from Milda Shia, she writes, any tips on how to not feel super stressed out about meeting my boyfriend's parents?
Taylor, what did you do when you met your boyfriend's parents?
Well, your mom was really nice.
she was
a breeze.
She was very, she was worried about it at first, but then came around. So it was really nice of her.
No, but seriously, okay. I'm sure you guys have all had experiences where you had to meet the parents. I'm going to start mm-hmm. with you, Tim.
Yeah.
Okay, what did you do?
You got to be yourself.
Okay.
If you fake it, try to be something you're not, you're not going to be able to hold it up.
Mm-hmm.
They'll catch you later and you will be cast aside by that family. Be yourself. Be who you are. if your significant other loves you for who you are,
right,
then likely the parents will love you for who you are.
Right.
So don't fake it.
Yeah.
That's don't my advice.
That's very good advice.
Yeah. If I were Will going to meet the parents, I would
well, you can use a girlfriend
tone it down a little bit.
No, I never tone it down.
Will doesn't ever censor himself, which is probably problematic when it comes to meeting parents. Do you have a good track record with meeting parents?
I have a great track record. Parents love me. The parents okay. probably love me more than whoever I'm dating loves me.
Okay. Parents love you.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that's good. That's good. Yeah. Do parents love you, Taylor?
Oh, parents. Yeah. Parents absolutely love me.
What about you, Tim? Parents love you?
They love me.
The ones
me.
That you've met?
Yeah.
That didn't sound
they
as confident.
Me. All the parents love us. I would say for a girl, you know, nice outfit. Good presentation is important, although the feminists will tell you don't shave and don't wear makeup and wear your hair all messy and don't do anything. Dress up, you know, look nicer, do your makeup, and just be, you know, just
definitely accuse nice. The dad of being a white supremacist.
Yes, definitely. Yeah.
Ask him his stance on
definitely
feminism.
Lead with asking them. Are. Yeah,
ask them to wear their mask yes. while you eat dinner.
Show ask no, them for their vaccine cards. Card
sure. I mean, if it was up to me, like I would ask your girlfriend and say, hey, who? Your dad, what sports teams does he like? And then like, you know, like be...
Oh,
like,
you're going to play the game.
No, you're not playing a game because you... It's not that you are like trying to fake it. It's like that you're actually interested so you can go and talk
I'm going
to
be like, yeah, I love hockey. I watch the Cavaliers all the time.
Wow.
Yeah. Listen, those Bruins. Those Bruins, Bob. Well, this is a girl asking. She's going to meet the boyfriend's parents.
Well, ask... No, okay. So don't ask... Yeah. Say... I don't know.
I think it's easier for what girls meeting the guy's parents.
Yeah,
for sure. It's way definitely less easier.
Yeah. 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 You just wear something you feel confident in and just be yourself, like Tim mm-hmm. said, and you're fine. The pressure's right. on the guy.
Yeah, for
the
sure.
The pressure really is it's on the guy.
For us.
Yeah, yeah. Because, yeah, no. Just be yourself, girl. Be nice. Be presentable. Those are the tips there. Next one. Dear Will and Amala, this is a question I got a lot, so I didn't even put a username on this. How do I handle being around my leftist family for Thanksgiving dinner?
Find a new family.
Oh, my goodness. Gosh. This is why we don't allow Will to do this.
Well, he left. It's great.
Tim, do you have any immediate thoughts?
You just love people. You know what yeah. I mean? You love them. I mean, I'm reading your book right now, Will, and you're talking about bridging. The gaps, but through kindness, really, right? Mm-hmm. Again, not to beat a dead horse over history, but I love history, right? I try to learn from it. Look at the most divisive time. Well, we're competing with it right now in America, but the Civil War, right? Nothing more divisive than that time. You had North and South brothers fighting brothers, mm-hmm. right? And at the end of that whole thing, when the Union and the North won, Lincoln could have done a lot of, he could have added to the divisiveness. He could have taken them down even further. He could have prosecuted everybody and he didn't. He told General Grant, let them up easy. And then he gives that second inaugural address, his last address. And what does he say? He says, it's time to bind up the nation's wounds and it's time to take care of one another. Mm-hmm. And he was talking to both North and South. So there's a place in here where we can disagree, but I mean, we were talking earlier about your mom, right?
Yeah.
You know exactly. You're more qualified yeah. to answer this question, but there's always commonality. Find love. You don't need to be divisive.
That's exactly right. You can still sit. I mean, I don't think this is sort of an unprecedented time, I think, for the amount of people who are choosing not to see family members or not to have relationships with them purely based on politics. And I think it is from a purely emotional standpoint. You can still sit at the dinner table with your family and maybe you decide politics is not on the table for dinner as well. We're just going to have dinner. We're going to talk about our personal lives. We're going to talk about what our crazy first cousin did and why she's in jail. I don't know. You're going to talk about random other stuff that has nothing to do that has nothing to do with politics. And you can do that because you should still love each other outside of your beliefs. My Thanksgiving dinner, if I was home in Florida, would be my two conservative grandparents, my conservative uncle, my leftist mother and sister, and sometimes brother, and then it would be me. So you can imagine if we delved into politics, it would look more like a food fight than a dinner. But we just don't. And we just talk about our lives and our days and memories, and that's fine.
Well, I think that's what's tough is that if a family is majority leftist and you're the one conservative pariah, they will bring it up. The leftist family members usually will bring up the politics. Someone will bring it up because leftists in many ways feel more justifiable about things they believe in that sense. You know, they feel like on a moral pedestal in a lot of times. So I think that a lot of them will bring it up, even if you don't bring it up to talk politics. So then how do you handle that as like the sole conservative in your family when you have all these other people who are leftists bring it up at the dinner table and you're just trying to enjoy your gravy?
You exercise self-control. It's a very easy thing to do, but people don't want to do it anymore. And I think as much as people complain about, oh, I hate being around my leftist family, a lot of people love drama and they love being able to come back to their friends the next day and be like, guess what my mother said at the dinner table? People love that as much as they hate conflict. So it's very easy if somebody wants to bait you into a conversation about your vaccine status or whether or not we let people from Mexico enter America, whatever they want to talk about, to go, okay, I respect that you think that. And move on to the next subject. And that's the worst thing you can do to somebody like that is not engage. The worst thing that you can do is not react. The worst thing you can do is not let them sort of take the jab at you and go, I respect that you feel that way. I'm going to move on. That's all you do. Don't let yourself be baited and exercise some self-restraint. It's that easy. Even if everybody else around you doesn't want to do that, turn the bigger cheek.
But you can also be strong and try and change their mind.
Yeah,
but
do it respectfully. I mean, you decide whether or not you want to breach that subject matter. It's like I went through my own personal reckoning with whether or not I should try to do that with my mother. And there were times that I did, and obviously it didn't end well. And some people are very strong-willed and strong-held in their beliefs, and they don't want to have their mind changed. You don't want to have your mind changed. And if you've decided that together and you don't want to have that conversation, then don't. If you think your family is open to that conversation and you can both do it respectfully, then by all means, breach the subject matter.
Yeah,
but don't do it. It's like give it one day. Thanksgiving dinner is one day. If we're all coming to the table and saying we can't have one day where we're just a family, that's more of a problem with you and your family than it is about the political climate, I think.
My thought on this is like, don't be the one to make things worse. Don't be the one to make things more difficult. Right. Don't be the one to make it more difficult to like have harmony and unity as a family. Like, okay, if you guys are going to be the ones that makes this impossible for us to have a nice dinner together, then fine. But I'm not going to be the one that makes it that way.
Yeah.
I think that's a good attitude to have.
Yeah, absolutely. Here's a little bit, this one's going to be a difficult one to answer for you guys, but you guys may have the best expertise in here. Dear Will and Amala from Bloom4115, I hope I didn't just expose you by saying your username. How do I let my girlfriend know she's gaining weight politely?
Ooh.
Ooh.
Well, I don't know. There's definitely a difference between it being a wife and a girlfriend.
Sure.
Because if your wife is skinny when you get married, and then in 10 years,
I can't
she
wait
like,
to hear this.
Gets really fat.
Uh-huh.
You didn't sign up for that.
Oh.
Just like if you got fat. If you got fat and you were skinny when you guys met and you get married and then you get fat too as the man, she didn't sign up for that either.
Welcome to Advice with Will, Tim.
Yeah.
Is that not fair?
Will's advice.
Is that not that like.
So he's asking. That's not the question though.
Yeah. There's well, a Tim term. There's a term say. I uh-huh. use. It's called measured honesty.
Mm-hmm.
Right. There's tactful ways to go about it. Right?
I feel like I was very tactful.
Okay. Measured honesty. Like mm-hmm. if you feel like there's ways to bring it up, mm-hmm. probably, calmly and sweetly, and if you feel like you need to bring it up,
mm-hmm.
but maybe not bring it up.
Maybe don't.
I think you should. Okay. I don't think you need to bring it up with a girlfriend.
Okay, I'm the girl. I'm the wife or the girlfriend or whatever, and I'm just enormously obese now after us being together for 5 years. How are you going to breach the subject matter? He said politely.
Okay, first of all,
Will would have left you already. So yeah, exactly. He wouldn't have to deal with the conversation.
Well, no, you have to understand that if someone gets sick, like morbidly obese.
Well, he's not saying morbidly obese. She said she's gaining weight lately.
Well, that turns into obese.
Okay, well then I'm the girl. Tell me politely.
I don't know exactly how I would tell you, but I would be polite. I mean, I would be polite. I would say, hey, like, I love you and I want the best for you and I want you to be healthy and,
mm-hmm.
Set a good example for our children and everything. And you're not looking so healthy. I don't know exactly how I'd say it, but I would say it. I would for sure say it because this is what we signed up for.
Taylor, you're married. How would you tell your current wife?
Are you saying that you wouldn't tell your wife? Like if she started getting overweight?
She would never get overweight. She's perfect.
Oh, that's what they all say. Right. But anyways...
But if she did,
we'd talk about stuff. It's hard to say because I don't think there's like a cookie cutter way. It
like,
happens in the context
honey,
of the relationship.
Do you remember when you used to care about the way you looked?
Remember when you used to look good?
Because I still do.
I still care.
I will say this: don't say what Will just don't say.
Don't.
I didn't sign up for this.
Yeah. No, don't say that. I'm not saying to say that. No, okay. I'm just saying that that's like. Like, you know, that's just what it is.
Chuck,
you know,
the comments are going wild. Chuck just said, Will's going to have a long and lonely life.
No, no. Listen, I've talked to women about this, okay? And they agree with me. It's like, if I got fat, that's not cool either, you know?
How would you want to be told?
Well, I would, personally for me, I'm not saying you should say this to a woman, but personally mm-hmm. for me, I wish my wife would just say, you're fat.
I'm the same way. You know?
Like if I'm getting fat, I wish she would just say, you're getting fat. You're mm-hmm. just, you're grossing me out. Every time you go to the bathroom, like you're looking in the mirror to take a shower, I can see your flap hanging over your gut. You know, I wish she would just say like horrible things about me. Then I would want to be less fat.
Please fat shame me.
Yeah, fat please. Shame me, please.
Bring I'm not back saying fat
that
shaming.
I'm not saying that you should do that to your wife. Okay, you love your wife. You would never do that to her.
No, it's different people. Like in studio here, I got my buddy. His name is Matt Cooper. He's the first guy we hired at OUR. He's right over here. Mm-hmm. And when I hired him, he was, well, I don't know if you were obese, but you were fat. Right? Now, so let me goodness. Tell you what I did. And he thanks me forever for this because mm-hmm. he's super in shape now. I mean, the guy's, he kills me at CrossFit. I used to kill him, right? And so I decided that until he lost weight, I was going to call him Fat Matt. It was perfect.
I told Will I would do that for him.
And I said, I said, hey, here's Fat Matt. My kids were calling him Fat Matt. and it was 6 months later, the guy was kids. Like, I'm not kidding you. It's 10 months. I wouldn't do this to my wife.
Right.
Yeah.
I don't have to. My wife's beautiful and thin and everything else. Right. But within what, 8 months, Maddie, you were like 10% body fat. It worked.
Amazing.
I helped the guy.
Yeah.
But you know, it's not cookie cutter. It's individual. I knew of he course. Could handle that. And I knew that'd be a good diet for him.
Okay. But let's truly dive down to, before we move on to the next question, how would you tell a woman this? I'm like trying to think of like, obviously I'm somebody who's like, I would date somebody who's super blunt and they would just tell me you're getting fat. Like it's not a good look, fix it. That would be my personal choice in a man, but a lot of women, especially with the whole soy boy thing we got going on right now, do not like men who are like that. I think it would be, if you're a man and you're fit and you've got a good body or whatever, and your girlfriend or your wife is not doing that, take on the task with her and say, you know what, like we're going to start doing this health plan together, and maybe don't mention that she's fat, and then say, well, hey, I got an extra membership at the gym, or do you want to start coming with me on a certain day to do this? Yeah. And like, I'll teach you how to do this, sort of ease that
or
into it.
Or express a willingness to do the things that she likes. Like Angie likes to do yoga. And so I don't really like to do that, but I'm like, I'll do yoga with you if you know, if it came to that.
Right. Exactly. Like, exactly. Yeah. Yeah, so find something that she can do that's physically active and then do it with her, because as long as it feels like a team effort and you don't tell her that she's fat.
Right.
Unless it's me, you can tell me that I'm fat.
Yeah.
Yeah.
See, I think
it depends on the girl.
Like, you just got to be honest with people. You know, I feel like so much of our society is the way that it is. Like, look at where we were in the 1970s in terms of obesity then versus obesity now. It's because people don't want to tell people that, you know, maybe you're a little thick. Maybe you're getting a little pudgy and rotund. Maybe you could cut a little bit. You
know? Rotund.
Oh. Rotund.
Moving on.
In a day where our National Institute of Health won't tell obese people that it puts them at greater risk of dying from COVID, I mean, it's pretty tough to tell anyone that they're
exactly.
fat these days.
Right. You know? You can't do
I
that.
I think you just got to tell them. And be nice about it. Don't be mean, but just
okay.
tell them.
Next one here, guys. Is it important to wait for marriage until you're financially stable? This is from List Makeup.
No.
First of all, Will's never going to tell his wife how much money he makes, so it doesn't matter. You'll never know if he's stable or unstable.
Absolutely not.
Okay.
Yeah,
first of all, the statistics are clear. Mm-hmm. Married couples actually are financially more stable and progress more financially than single people.
Mm-hmm.
So just make that decision. Marriage is more important. Family is more important than finances anyway. You'll figure it out.
Yeah. I've met a lot of very wealthy people, and a lot of them who I talk to, not all of them, but many of the wealthy people I talk to who are married with their spouse, and they'll be like, yeah, like, you know, I started my business. I was dirt poor and we got married and then things just started to take off. And now, you know, you're super wealthy.
Because you got a partner now who's going to counsel you and guide you and help you. And you're going to attain that.
Right. And then financial you also stability. Feel responsible for that person too. Yeah. You're like, okay, now I need to like work harder.
You grow up, you mature real quick, and you're going to be motivated to do better. So get married.
Right.
It's great advice. Yeah. But yeah, we did a segment earlier or last week on the show. Be honest about if you are financially unstable, be honest about the fact that you are financially unstable before you, you know, get somebody to marry you. Because we talked about what 40% of Americans, according to a poll, which who knows how accurate it is, engage in something called financial infidelity, where they don't tell their partners about what they're spending on or how much debt they have. So yeah, don't like marry somebody and then 2 years later go like, oh, hey, honey, I just got a message that I'm $150,000 in debt for my student loans. How do we fix that? Be honest. Hopefully you're both on the up and up and you'll grow together in a marriage. And next
real quick, just to play devil's advocate here. Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, I agree with everything you guys said, but just to keep in mind that like 50% or the, not 50%, but the fact 50% of marriages end in divorce these days.
Right.
And the number one cause of divorce is usually financial.
Yes.
And so this isn't a light, you know, license to do whatever you want and just like spring is foolishly into a situation without thinking about it, without having a financial plan or not being financially responsible as a man or as a husband going into a marriage. You should at least be reasonably prepared to provide for that. Or like Amla was saying, like, make sure that you're at least honest with your partner and that you guys have a plan going into this and you're not just like, oh, we'll figure it out because love just makes all things work. Like it's going to introduce stress on your marriage if you have financial issues early on anyways. And so just be prepared for that as well.
Yeah. Prepared and honest. Next one. This is more for the guys. What are ways that a girl can stand out to a guy that she likes? What makes women stand out to you guys? Two of you are married, so stand hopefully out. Nothing.
Stand out but, in a good way?
Yes. Like, she's in a group, all her friends are hot or whatever. What's going to make her stand out to find a guy that takes interest in her?
Are these things that she can control? Or things
I would
that
hope
are out
it,
of
yes. Obviously, it would be something that she can control, yeah. Be, okay. What are you going to say, be hot?
No, I was going to say, like, eyes. You know?
Do you want to give
like
some more context?
Like, if you got a group of women, and then, like, they all kind of have, like, normal eyes... And then one of them has like really striking, like dark brown eyes that are like big and really
purchase
nice
contacts.
And
then Anna like, G13.
Wait, what?
I said buy contacts.
Wait, what? What are you saying?
Because you're saying her eyes. She can't change them.
No, I know. I'm just saying like that's something like if you see a group of women, that'll stand out to me. I like look at their
the
eyes.
The first thing I thought was confidence. Confidence is sexy. Mm-hmm. You know, it compensates for other issues that you might not have. If you're just confident, outgoing,
yep. Mm-hmm.
Guys like that.
Yep. Yeah,
they do like that.
Anything else? Well, other than eyes.
It's true. That's like what I look for.
Okay, but outside of and that, whatever. Okay, all the girls, you run into a group of five girls. They're all brown hair, green eyes. They're all hot. What makes the one stand out that you're like, that's the girl I want on a G13?
She has to have the best jokes.
Okay, so humor.
Yeah, okay. Definitely.
Okay.
Quick-wittedness, cleverness, humor. If I say, like you guys hear me on the show, I say ridiculously stupid things. And they
and
have
sometimes
to be,
they're funny.
Well, they're always funny. But they have to be able to laugh at that, you know, when I say something ridiculous.
Okay.
They have to be able to laugh.
And they can get into a profound conversation as well. They can talk.
Right. They're
depth.
Not an idiot. Yeah. The only reason why they could like keep up on a humor level, cleverness level is because they're like smart and able to think things through quickly. Like that's like all very sexy.
Okay. Taylor, do you have any specific characteristics?
I think the thing that stands out to me most is like having a strong sense of self-worth and like personal identity to where you're not like desperate for male affirmation or male attention, but that you are secure in yourself. And like me, that's something you kind of can pick up on as you talk to somebody that they're not just like throwing themselves at me because that's like a shallow woman does that, you know, but somebody with real substance and real self-worth, they're like probing you and trying to figure out, are you worth my time type of thing. Yeah. And when I pick up on that, I'm like, okay, this girl knows who she is. And that's much more interesting to me than just, oh, this girl's got the best, you know, the hottest eyes or whatever.
Right.
Like,
right.
You know, so
Will,
not to take a shot at Will, but
take a shot at Will.
We were just talking about looking at him. Okay. If you're just looking at him.
He's going to be like, my wife's dumb as rocks, but those eyes are beautiful.
Yeah.
Whoever's the best kisser, just kiss all five.
just kiss her. Yeah,
which
Tim, that's
five
his,
is the best
that's his regular advice on the advice segment. If a girl writes in or a guy likes in and is like, I really like this girl, what do I do? Will just goes, just kiss her. How do you feel about that advice before we give off our final send-off?
Just kiss her.
You're trying to get arrested.
Sure.
Yeah.
See what she does. You learn a ton.
Exactly.
You learn a ton from that.
So, yeah. You don't have
And when
no
you're
questions.
Sitting in jail. Yeah. You're going to learn.
Well, if she doesn't kiss you back, that might be a good thing. You might mm-hmm. be like, oh. She
doesn't like me.
You can learn a lot. Right.
I mean, learned
some confidence.
A lot.
That's what I was looking
yeah,
for.
Yeah, exactly.
I learned so much about the LA County Jail today. I really learned a lot. Anyways, guys, that is our show for today. We ended with Dear Will and Amala, Will giving questionable advice, and Tim and I giving very sound advice.
I gave succinct, good advice. You can't tell me that wasn't good advice.
You gave them something, Will. Thank you guys so much for watching. Please like, subscribe, click the notification bell to be notified every single day when we go live, 2:30 Pacific, 5:30 Eastern. If you'd like to listen to us rather than watch, you can go to Google Play, Spotify, or Apple Podcasts. Leave us a 5-star review on those platforms so that everybody knows you love the show. We know that you like the show. And if you want to access any of the stories that we talked about today, go to the description down below. We have them all linked for your viewing pleasure. You can fact check us more than YouTube and Facebook do. And Tim, thank you so much for being on the show today.
Thank you. I'll be back tomorrow, right? And the
well,
next day.
Let's not get into it.
I'm thinking Will, Emily, and Tim Ryan. Yeah.
Well, actually, I think Tim.
Yeah, we better
Will
put my name
Amala.
In there.
There we go. Yeah. Yeah. We've got him signed on. New employee on our team here.
There we go.
Yeah. Sorry, Hot Scott.
Yeah. As long as you tell me when I'm getting fat.
I will tell you. I promise you.
Okay, good.
Call him Fat Willie.
Big Willie.
Oh, yeah. No, not that one. And we're done. Thank you guys so much for watching. We'll see you tomorrow.
Peace.